Our next presenter is John Foster Bay. He's the Director of Policy, Program Evaluation, and Research for CSR Incorporated. Prior to joining this organization, he was the Senior Advisor to the Director of Research and Policy Development at the Corporation for National and Community Services. He spent more than a dozen years as Senior Program Executive at the Ford, MacArthur, and Northwest Area Foundations. He has an MBA from Yale School of Management, and he's a doctoral candidate at Georgetown University. Thank you.
Good afternoon. One thing that'll be helpful here is that Emmanuel actually went over several of the slides that I actually have, so we won't have to spend a lot of time on those. I'd like to start also by just acknowledging, first of all, my colleagues at NCI and working with them on this evaluation. I'd like to also acknowledge the cooperation and just the participation of the CNP sites. The data that we've collected, we couldn't really do the reports that we're doing without their participation. And I'd like to also acknowledge a couple of our researchers that have been working with me on this, Craig Deerfield and Tiffany Jeffries, whose names should appear there but are not there. I'm going to talk about the structure of the program, a little bit about the phase one and phase two outcomes, the linking of the needs assessments and interventions, and then talk about how we link the phase one and phase two around the intervention outcomes. And I'm going to say a little bit about our junior researchers and pilot studies and publications. Emmanuel actually already covered a lot of it, including using some of the slides that I was thinking about using. So this is the logic model for phase two, and we are actually right now in the evaluation. We're in phase two, but we're beginning to move into phase three. If you go back to Emmanuel's slide, you'll kind of see where we are in terms of timing. And I'm not going to try to go through it, mostly because I can't see all the points from here because my eyes aren't that good. So let's talk a little bit about the program structure. In phase one was really aimed at building the capacity of each of the CMP sites to undertake successful community-based participatory research. And really, maybe two main things were going on there. They were building a broad-based community partnerships, and at the end of that process, they were also designing and delivering educational activities and materials that were aimed at informing their communities about cancer issues and cancer disparity issues. The phase two structure was really designed to implement the community-based participation model itself. The CMPs were expected to perform needs assessments, to evaluate specific needs in their communities, to begin to develop interventions, to carry out policy work and to train junior researchers. We look at the phase two and phase one and phase two outcomes. Phase one outcomes, the most important thing was actually to produce a successful set of community partnerships. Secondly, was to target the community's awareness of cancer disparity issues. In phase two, some of our primary outcomes here were to increase the use of beneficial cancer interventions, increase the number of junior researchers from minority and underserved communities, implement pilot projects around these interventions, and encourage publications so that the work that is going on at the CMP sites could contribute to the scientific literature. Let's talk a little bit about linking the needs, our needs assessments to the interventions. The needs assessments are seen as being a very critical link between the work that was being done in phase one and the work that is being done in phase two. The needs assessments are the key to letting the partnerships know where the community sees its own needs. Again, one of the important things about the community-based participatory research model is that it's not driven by the researchers or by the health professionals. It is a reflection of a partnership between all those sectors. And so the needs assessments, what you don't want to see is interventions without any connections to communities surfacing the needs. And so that's a, so it's a very important. And we identified in our database at this point that they reported a roughly around 180 needs assessments. In the database as well, we have another 130 interventions that are aimed specifically at increasing the use of beneficial cancer interventions aimed at the cancer sites that Emmanuel pointed out in his presentation. One of the things that we're working with, but it's a challenging, is to see the best, to look at the best ways of linking the needs assessments to the interventions. Obviously, one of the things you'd like to know is that if the communities are surfacing a certain set of needs and certain issues, that the interventions actually respond to that. That's challenging in many ways, and we're still working through some techniques for doing that a little more effectively. This is just a chart looking at the distribution of the types of interventions that we have now. It's similar to, it's slightly different look to the I think what we've seen, what we saw earlier. But you can see, for example, that for example, breast cancer screening is most prevalent. It's one of the more prevalent ones, followed by colorectal and some of the other areas. This is just a couple, I'm not going to go through them, just a couple of examples that some of the sites have talked about in terms of the success that they've identified through their interventions. So the first thing I want to talk about in terms of outcomes is looking at the idea of increasing the utilization of beneficial cancer interventions. And one of the challenges here, as a national evaluator, each of the sites are doing different things. They have different populations. As you would expect for this model, they're taking a different emphasis and a different focus, and they're also identifying what they see as their outcomes in slightly different ways. And so, one of the challenges is to try to identify a indicator that would allow you to look across all the sites. I'm going to start off by talking about how we're looking at thinking about how to look at coming up with the utilization outcome, and also just some of the factors that we think might be important in understanding that the outcome and differences in the outcome. First, one of the things we did was look at which of the sites are actually reporting at this point on their, or are able to report outcomes on their interventions. What we call reported outcomes means that the site has been able to report on the treatment group, and that they're able to compare that treatment group to a population that they're targeting in their particular community. And right now, about 26% of the interventions are able to report on what we think of as an outcome. Another 35% are doing are reporting what we would call utilization measures. And the utilization measure is, again, it's collecting information on a group that's being treated. It could be screenings, it could be some other activity, but they're not at this point they're not referencing that to a population group. And then the rest just simply says that the interventions are in some phase of development. The outcomes are in some phase of development. They're either collecting data or they're beginning to actually form the outcome measure. We found that if you look at whether or not they are actually able to report on an outcome by whether they are dealing with a primary prevention issue or a secondary prevention issue, we see that the CMPs that have been focused primarily in their interventions on primary prevention are a bit more likely to actually report on an outcome as we've measured it. And for those that are focusing on secondary prevention seem to be more likely to focus on or at least report on a utilization measure. That's something that we need to look at a little further to understand why that's the case. It may just simply be the stage of development that they are, but it may have something to do with some of the challenges of doing these different kinds of interventions. So let's talk about how we tried to link what we talked about in phase one, and particularly the idea of the partnership development to the outcomes in phase two. In this case, the utilization of beneficial cancer interventions. A key explanatory variable, and these are things that we're actually developing. So these are in formation. But one of the things that we're doing is we're trying to quantify the partnership development process. We're looking at the various components that have been laid out as part of the model, and we're now trying to develop an indicator that would allow us to see how successful the groups have been at actually building their capacity, and to see how that changes over time. So this is really, it's still in the formative stages. It's not, and I just got the 5 minutes, so it's still in the formative stages, but I thought it would be interesting to see just kind of roughly how we're approaching this. We're developing something called a network strength index, and we're going to be doing a lot more work on that in conjunction, obviously as the evaluators, but also in conjunction with the sites and with our funding partners at NCI as well. And I won't go through all the components at this point. So we did some just preliminary work just to see how it connected to whether or not interventions actually had outcomes. And so we just found some interesting results. One of the things we found was that for sites that seemed to have a very high level of network strength, they were slightly less likely to have a reported outcome. We don't know what to attribute that to, but it's interesting to take a look at whether there's something about the process of developing outcomes themselves that we may not be fully capturing in terms of how we look at the partnership formation process. We also wanted to look at several other attributes of each of the sites. There are two areas that are easy to identify at this point, and there will be other attributes that we'll look at, particularly looking at attributes associated with the communities that they're working in. But right now, we looked at whether a CNP site had also been a part of the special populations network initiative. And we also looked at the funding levels. The funding level one, or funding group one, represented those groups that got the largest grants. Funding group two represented those who got grants in the middle, and funding group three represented those who had the smaller grants. And if we look at whether or not they have been a former SPN, we see that the former SPNs were a little less likely to have an outcome at this point. And now, that may not mean a lot. It just gives us something that it suggests us that we need to pay a little more attention to whether those groups are really different in some other fundamental ways. Similarly, we looked at funding level. What we found was that the group with the highest amount of funding also tended to be a bit more likely to actually have an outcome. So that might suggest that the resources, available resources, are important in allowing the groups to actually be able to develop these outcomes. Developing these outcomes are difficult, they're time-consuming, and they turn out to probably be resource intensive. The thing that is a little less easy for us to understand, though, it turns out that the group with the least, getting the smallest grants, also seem to be the second most likely to actually be able to develop an outcome measure. So we're not quite sure why that's the case at this point. And I'm not going to go through all this because Emmanuel went through a lot of it, but I just thought some of this might be interesting. We actually looked at the distribution of junior researchers by their educational attainment and by the faculty positions. As you can see, they're most likely to be doctoral. They have doctoral degrees at this point, and they're most likely to be assistant professors. But you can see that there's a large number that are also coming who are just now having college degrees or just at master's level. And I now have 1 minute. We also looked at them in terms of their race and ethnicity. They get a sense of what that distribution was like. And also by gender. And this is the very similar to the chart you've already seen, so I'm not going to go through that again. This we thought was interesting. This is actually, we calculated awards to application ratio for their going after grants. It's kind of a success ratio, and we looked at that by race and ethnicity. So you can see quickly. The ones that say 100%, you need to take with a little bit of caution because that the ends in those for those are very small. And we'll pilot projects, but we don't have much time, and I think Emmanuel actually has talked about a lot of this already, so I'm going to, it's only in the last few, so I'm going to move on. Thank you very much.